Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive, and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Cleary.
And today we'll be discussing Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1. Damask Cleary, my friend, my co-host of the last 6 years, this is it. The last ever season of TV we'll be reviewing for the podcast. How you feeling?
Well, I was already weirdly emotional then you said that, so how dare you? Don't look at me, don't talk to me. I'm fine, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm really glad it's Buffy that we're talking about for our last one. I'm excited about doing this, actually. I wonder how much I have to say. I feel like because over the years, we've said everything to each other. What else is there new to say about Buffy? Particularly season one will be interesting. But yeah, I think this is bittersweet. I'm looking forward to what comes next. I'm definitely going to miss the podcast. I'm not going to miss the amount of work it takes to do the podcast. But the funny thing is, it's like, this was a funny one because we're going to bet something we knew we already liked on some level. It was a real pleasure to do it. And I was like, oh, why are we stopping this again? This is easy.
I know.
Just watching one of my favorite shows so we can talk about it. Easy peasy.
Yeah, I absolutely had the same reaction. I'm like, oh, I can do this for another 6 years. Which I know I just simply can't. I was like real puttering towards the end of this 6 year run. So it's... it's easy to forget all the work that goes into it.
Yeah. And it's, well, yeah, there's stuff, there'll be something. We've got to figure out exactly what that looks like, what form of that takes, especially with our lives changing the way they are, especially this year. Fucking hell, 2023 is going to be an interesting year. But for those who don't know, there will be one more episode of Hunting Seasons after today. This is just our last review episode. We'll do a final, big grand finale special look back at the last 6 years, sort of wrapping up the podcast once and for all before we move on to whatever's next. So you can look forward to that in the next, we'll see, week, two or so. We'll figure out what it's going to look like ourselves. But there will be one more episode coming. So I encourage anyone, we've already had some very nice messages, which we might get to in the final episode. But anyone who wants to reach out, ask us a question, if there's anything they want to know about, you know, the podcast, about us, about the last 6 years, anything I want to, you know, just messages they want to pass on, please send that sort of stuff to contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. Even if you've never spoken to us before, just like to say, hi, I've been listening for a while now and really enjoyed you guys. Or I've been listening and I hate you guys. Whatever. We don't really care. Just to know there's people out there listening.
Be weird if we got a flood of like good riddance emails.
We did. Oh, thank God. It's finally over.
It's over. I can unsubscribe.
Finally. All right. Let's do it. Let's get to our spoiler-free review of Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer is an American supernatural drama television series created by writer and director Joss Whedon, based, though not canonically, on the 992 film of the same name. The show follows Buffy Summers, a high school girl who just wants to live a normal teenage life, but is chosen by fate to be the Slayer, destined to battle against vampires, demons, and the forces of darkness. Premiering on the WB on March 10th, 1997, the show stars Sarah Michelle Gellar, Allison Hannigan, Nicholas Brendan, Charisma Carpenter, David Boreanaz, Christine Sutherland, and Anthony Stewart Head as Buffy's watcher, Rupert Giles. Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1 consists of 12 episodes, each coming in at around 44 minutes. It took us approximately 8 hours and 45 minutes to watch on Disney Plus here in Australia. Buffy would go on to run for 7 seasons, ending in 2003, having built a massive fan following and changing the world of TV and the world of these two podcast hosts forever. So, Damask, before we get to our spoiler-free review of Buffy Season 1, aside from teasing it for years on end on this show, why did we choose Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1 to be our final hunting season's review?
Well, I speak to that in my spoiler-free review, but it has a special place in our friendship as well as the television landscape as a whole.
I mean, that succinctly put. I'll let you extrapolate on that then in your review. But yeah, that's basically it. It's like it was a very, very meaningful show for us personally and then individually and collectively, the two of us. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, it was also extremely influential and important in the landscape of like modern TV. Like you think about when this show came out in 1997, this is a couple of years before The Sopranos started airing and is Sopranos is considered sort of like the grandfather or the first of, like, prestige TV shows that we know today. Buffy had an influence on modern television as well in a big, big way that a lot of people still recognize to this day. It's also worth discussing that we probably didn't review this earlier due to some of the controversies around the creator that have kind of unfolded before our eyes over the last 6 years, I realize. Like, We were talking about Firefly back in our first year or second year, I think, as well. And I don't think things were quite as clear then as they are now about Joss Whedon. But
no, they certainly weren't.
Yeah.
But they are now.
But they are now. And yet, here we are talking about Buffy all the same. Damask, would you like to give your spoiler-free review of Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1, please?
Sure. The last time. Here we go. All right, so as you were just saying, it's only fitting that our final review is Buffy. It cemented my friendship with Brod, you know, as we sat in his bedroom as teenagers, watched it and passionately discussed it like, you know, little wankers that we were. you know, I'd always loved film and television, but I never had the opportunity to talk about or debate it before that friendship with Brod. I didn't know about chat rooms or sites where I could go and nerd out with others, so I just watch and rewatch things and have all of these thoughts with nowhere to go. That was until I started to hang out with Brod and his friends, a real collection of Xanders, if you will.
How dare you?
Yeah. But am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
I didn't know television could be a passion. It was, you know, in my house and I think in the, I don't know, larger culture, it was something lazy people did when they were too unimaginative to do anything else. But no, spending those teen years watching and debating Buffy with Brod made space for me to realize that I had a passion for story. And yes, story that was particular for this medium of television. It allowed my love to flourish and grow. I think now when someone asks me the simplest question about a show I'm interested in, you know, my heart begins to race and my mind is caught up in like this tornado of exciting thoughts that I just spew out at them, those poor people. But I don't feel silly about being passionate about television anymore. I enjoy that feeling and have done so since Brod and I pressed play for the first time on that DVD. Buffy was the catalyst that helped me discover that this is my thing, TV is my thing, these are the stories I want to talk about, and even when the podcast goes dark, I will continue to harass my friends with my opinions. TV is so important and it's so valid to be passionate about. This is how the majority of people experience and learn about the world. I learned to be more compassionate through TV. I learned to be braver through TV. I learned about parts of myself I had never thought there and about parts of others I never otherwise could. What started as, you know, flickering black and white images on a clunky big box in your living room is now projected onto every screen we possess. We no longer sit by the glowing fire and hear a story. We sit by a flickering screen and watch. We want to be taken somewhere else to see lives unlike our own, but hearts that echo ours. TV can be many things, but for me, it's this very simple thing. I don't know you, but I know you. And when a show allows us access into a shared understanding of what it is to be a person good Lord, I'm in. Which brings me back to Buffy, the show I'm meant to be reviewing. And sorry, I get so lectury and tangenty whenever I start thinking about this show. And even just that sentence I wrote is very Buffy-esque. It really has infiltrated my mind and heart. Anyway, where was I? You know, I think for most people my age, you know, add or subtract 5-10 years, who are passionate about TV, the origin is most of the time Buffy. And that's not a coincidence. This show has inspired countless creators to go on and tell their own stories, feeling seen and validated by the stories told within Buffy. It had a unique voice and made others believe that having your own distinct voice was beneficial to storytelling on TV. You didn't have to be the same. But more than just creators, though, this show sparked a passionate appreciation of television for my gen, opened up the scope of what the medium could do. The show took television seriously, but had fun doing it. Long-form narratives are so hard to pull off, and this show perfected it. The key? Care and respect for character. How this show treats its characters has formed what I love about TV. For those of you that have listened to the 199 other reviews we've done, know that character is always the most important thing to me. In my mind, at least, every show should follow the principles laid out by Buffy. Obviously, not every show should have quippy asides and its own vernacular. In fact, if that was the case, I'd chuck my TV into the bin. No, what I desire from a show is well laid out character and a deep understanding of relationships. What stays with you about this show is not the big bads, although there are some truly great ones, or the threat of another apocalypse, or the flashy CGI, and yes, it was flashy for the time. What stays with you are the people. Buffy has always dedicated its time to creating fully formed characters. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but there is a moment in this season in which Buffy looks at her watcher, the adult guide in her life, and for all of the hijinks and frivolity of the show, she says to him in absolute vulnerability, "I'm 16, I don't want to die." This line works for multiple reasons and will have you tearing up. One, Sarah Michelle Gellar is truly incredible in the role of Buffy Summers. And this is just season one. Her performance is nuanced and impactful throughout the show's run, though. When comedy is required, she gives. When sassiness is required, good Lord, she gives. And when heart-wrenching pain is required, she will have you on your knees. And this is one of the first moments we see her true capabilities. Secondly, this moment brings the show back into focus. All of those larger elements I mentioned, you know, end of the world, death, destruction, camp horror, they are super engaging part of the show, but it only stays with you if you care. And this show never forgets to remind you to care, to remind you of the toll that this teenage girl must endure. Prophecies be damned. She has just made best friends who finally understand her. She wants to fall in love for the first time. She wants to go to biology class and complain about how stupid it is. And in that moment, her voice gets very small and cracks with heartbreak. "I'm 16. I don't want to die." It's a good moment, but my explanation can never give it justice because what really holds it up are the scenes that led up to it. The ones in which this 16-year-old laughs with her friends, fights for them, dances with them, and shows us that she is actually, despite the superpowers, a real person with real relationships. Now, okay, all right, I need to get back to the actual season. I'm here to review properly. You know, first season.
No, you're allowed to do what you want on this one. Okay. It's like, I think it's understood we're talking about Buffy as a whole while also talking about Buffy. We have to. Yeah. We have to.
Yeah.
Our last opportunity.
Yeah. First seasons are notoriously rough. You know, there's a whole world to introduce as well as a cast of characters that inhabit it. Buffy season one is a solid beginning for the series. It has a strong sense of self, clearly articulates its characters, and has a clear format of Monster of the Week with one overarching big bad that is a looming threat. And as I watched the series, it got me excited. I wanted to binge it. I wanted to get to the next season. And sure, maybe that's because I know just how good this series gets. But I think a big part of it is a genuine enjoyment of most episodes. Mm-hmm. Is it silly to watch a main character get kidnapped by a giant bug? Maybe, but the concern expressed by the other characters is portrayed as genuine and pressing, and so me as an audience member feels that same concern. It's the development of and commitment to the connection of the relationships that gives the most absurd stakes and stories a weight that not many shows in the genre have. Thanks to Buffy, there are now countless teen dramas with a supernatural edge. However, what most of those seem to suffer from is a distinct misunderstanding of what made the original so great. When these imitations focus on relationships, they almost always prioritize romantic and sexual connections. And this show doesn't really do that. Is there an element of romance? Of course there is, but that's not what this show focuses on. Buffy isn't really a show about a chosen one. It's about the development and endurance of a chosen family. The family is often messy and complicated, but every action, whether good or not, is done with love for one another. That's why the end of the world matters, because the people that mean the most are in danger, not civilization itself. Once again, I kind of got distracted from this season of Buffy, but what I'm trying to say is I can't really review this season in a fresh way. I love the show as a whole. It's important to me. And I know I've been really subtle about that. anyway, like, whatever. I like this season. You should watch the show. But also, how have you not watched this show already? Are you insane? So that's my, I guess, review.
That was wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. And now there's no way I can top that or follow that. But I'll do my best just to... First, I just want to ask you a couple of questions based on some of the things you said as well, or comment on.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I definitely... I had the same... effect on me from Buffy, I guess, is that the care for characters in Buffy and how that's made me affected my taste or unlocked the understanding of what makes the shows I care about the most work. Like, I think about Avatar The Last Airbender, or I think about Community, or I think about even Doctor Who when it's at its best, which all have like an episode of the week, sort of structure to them. They all have an overarching storyline, but most importantly, they do have... that care for character. It's like that, first and foremost, the characters are people inside whatever zany world or situation you want, but they make you care. And that is always at the base or at the center of the shows that I truly, 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 truly love. And that starts with Buffy for me. And when did you start watching Buffy? I'm not sure. Did you stop? You were watching Buffy before we were friends, right?
Yeah. So I watched season one and maybe two when it was first being aired on television.
Right.
I still kind of can't believe that my parents let me watch it, because I was, you know, I wasn't allowed to watch Charmed because I had witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Buffy was so on this other, slightly more absurd level that my, you know, Christian parents were like, eh, this is silly, whatever. Mm-hmm.
She wore a cross around her neck. That may be where that helps.
That's true, yeah. She was fighting the forces of evil as opposed to benefiting from them.
Yes.
Yeah, so I watched it when it first aired. And then, but I think like we only got the first maybe two, maybe three seasons, and then it went on like a really weird time, like far too late for me.
It got pushed super late. So I remember, and I've always been a night owl, but I remember this has probably affected me why I'm into TV as well. I had a TV in my room from a pretty young age. So I remember watching a lot of stuff that I probably shouldn't have been, stuff that was on SBS, like Evangelion and South Park when I was still in primary school. And Buffy was there too, because 1997, I would have been in grade four, I think. And I don't know exactly when I started watching Buffy. I think it was pretty early on, but I remember like when Once More With Feeling was first on, I remember sitting up that night to watch it, because even then somehow I knew that that was going to be a special episode.
A thing. Yeah.
And it was on like 10:30 p.m. on Channel 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was watching from an early stage, but then ultimately I think shows how dedicated I was to the show. When I finally got a job, I was like 15, I was making money working like night shift at Big W. I spent my money on two things and two things only. Futurama DVD box sets, which was also hard to watch because they put on some ridiculous time after a while, and Buffy box sets, and bought the whole, all of them. There was like...
I think, that's what, like when, because I watched it on TV, but I was so little at the time. Like I was like a baby. But then when the DVD started coming out, then you go like the video store. I didn't buy them, but at the video store, I'd go and like hire them and watch them and stuff. And that's how I kept relatively up to date with what was going on in the Buffyverse. Yeah.
Do you think Buffy, I have this memory of this moment Was Buffy one of the reasons we actually started the podcast? Like, I remember a particular party we were at I think it might have been before you were living with us in Clifton Hill, and we're pretty drunk.
And I don't know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. One of our mutual friends / acquaintances decided to tell us that Buffy sucked. Was it that party or maybe it was a different party?
No, it was that. So the instance that you're talking about is it was before you moved into the house that
before I moved into that
Yeah,
one.
It was the house before that.
Yep.
And yes, you and I were intoxicated. This is true. And yes, one of our mutual friends said something disparaging about Buffy Firefly, I believe. So both of those shows. And you and I, this poor person, like, you and I get like pretty lectury at the best of times when we've got control of our like minds and mouths. And we didn't have control of either. And this poor person was just sat there silent as we yelled and screamed and pointed. And I think it was a good 3-hour lecture as to why they were wrong.
So really that was like episode zero of Hunting Season. It's just the one we didn't record.
Yeah, I'm glad it's not recorded. Jeez Louise.
As I echo a lot of what you said and what I've written, I haven't written quite as extensively as you have. So I'm sorry, listeners, I can't compete with what Damascus done there. What a treat. I was trepidatious about coming back to Buffy, and to review it. Firstly, the aforementioned Whedon of it all. Just, it's gotten awkward to talk about Buffy now because the guy who is most associated with it and its creation is apparently a piece of shit. Which sucks.
I will say to that though, because I'm like, well, why can I watch Buffy and Firefly, but I just simply can't bring myself to read like the Harry Potter series. Mm-hmm. I'm like, because he's disappeared. You know what I mean? He hasn't like, as far as I know, unless he's like still tweeting and defending his position or actions. And like, I'm not excusing what he's doing. I think it's terrible, and he should disappear. So it's not a constant thing in which I'm like, oh, I totally disagree with this person's worldview. I can still very much put Buffy in my mind as belonging to me and
there's also
an important part of my life.
Yeah, he has virtually disappeared, which is good. He doesn't have an online presence. He's not spewing hate and stuff like that around the internet like other people, creators we'd like to forget. But the other thing is as well with Buffy, I think that helps, is it's much more collaborative than a book series, right? Like JK is
100%.
The so much like 99% of what Buffy is comes, you know, this, we don't want to discount editors and artists and stuff like that associated with Harry Potter, but JK is responsible for the vast majority of what Harry Potter is. And, like, you can make the argument that's true of Whedon, but it's just not going to be true. There are other writers on the staff, directors, producers, the actors themselves, etc. And it's true, especially as the show goes on, he actually gets less involved with Buffy as he goes to do, like, Angel and Firefly and stuff like that. So his influence wanes over time, and potentially when the show is sometimes at its best as well. Like, it's... So it's easier to like look at people like Drew Goddard or Marty Knox and these sorts of writers and directors who are on the show and understand how important their influence was, and we can still celebrate them, which makes it a lot easier, I think, to look past it. But still, it's awkward to go and talk about Buffy and anything that's like Whedon-esque because of what's been happening there. And secondly, I just wondered how well the show, but especially season one, would hold up. This is a show that is legendary in my head, but not one I've returned to heaps, especially when you're trying to watch a season of television each and every week, aside from a few choice episodes, which I do return to on occasion, and especially not season one. I really don't think I've gone back and watched season one a whole lot, if much at all.
Agreed. Yeah. It's one of the ones I've watched the least of, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's easy to do it because if you're familiar with the show, you sort of understand the... It's the season that's introducing you to the world and to the characters. And, like, by the end of season one, you're not in a place where you have to remember a lot of stuff that happened. The big plot point at the end of season one, you remember that much, and everything from there is gravy, pretty much. It's obviously, I don't think it's the show at its full powers either. And I was worried how it would have dated, be that the dialogue, the visuals, or just the vibe in general. Turns out, I'm a fucking idiot. I obviously can't discount that I am already very partial to this show. So yeah, bias for days, but very, very, very quickly, I fell back in love with this show. Or more accurately, these characters. Buffy, in the years I've been actively watching the show, I think I have really undervalued Buffy Summers as a character.
You have. We've had this discussion before many times, yes.
She is the fucking best.
She is the best.
Yeah. Like, she really, really is. In my mind, and this is funny to think about this now, it's because it's not just reflecting on the show, it's reflecting back on me, the person who was watching the show back in the day.
Mm.
Was I Xander? Yes. Did I see myself as Xander? Probably. Absolutely. Self-burn. Definitely.
Self-burn,
yeah. And yeah, you know, it's not, I don't think it's unusual to
see
a version of yourself on TV or someone that sort of represents you on TV and be drawn to that. Now, that's not to say I thought Xander was the best character in the show, but it probably... I didn't necessarily, as much as I liked Sarah Michelle Gellar, and I did really like Sarah Michelle Gellar, especially, boy, I'm just remembering getting the yearbook when I was still in primary school. Oh, I had a massive crush on SMG. I don't think I necessarily really, really appreciated Buffy. I probably appreciated like Willow and Giles and some of these characters, Anya, who comes up in later seasons and stuff like that, a bit more. And coming to it now, she is fun. Funny, relatable, strong, vulnerable, and just a flat out like great hero.
Yes.
The revelation I had watching season one is just she just knows everyone at that school and she genuinely cares for people. Not just
she's so lovely.
She's like, the best.
And not in like a saccharine, annoying or boring way. She's just like a really fun, nice person.
100%. And I think that's a lot of props needs to be given to Sarah Michelle Gellar for, as you said, just knowing how to bring that to make herself charming and likable, even before you get to the high emotional stuff like you do towards the end of the season and so forth. She's just fucking cool. I think I probably understand the appeal. Like, I don't want to minimize the character of Buffy by comparing her to another character, but I think it works in a similar way to why Peter Parker as Spider-Man is someone that a lot of people gravitate towards. Peter Parker is very relatable, is just, you know, that nerdy high school guy who happens to also be Spider-Man. He's been inflicted with these powers, has this great responsibility. I mean, so much of this speaks to what Buffy is. They're not the same, but they work on a similar level. And it's like the appeal makes total sense, even if I've never really recognized that until this time for some dumb reason. The good influence of doing the podcast, I guess, is I can start to see these things differently. Willow and Giles, also wonderful characters.
Mm-hmm.
Not a revelation, but Allison Hannigan might be the MVP of the show, especially season one, aside from probably Sarah Michelle Gellar.
She's so wonderful. Yeah.
She just makes you care, whether it's Willow's cute and nerdy quirks that make you adore her, or her big doe-eyed tears that make you want to protect her with your life.
This isn't a spoiler, but there's one moment where Buffy is going to go off because she sees someone in a crowd. And Willow just cutely goes, "Oh, you don't have to come back. Like, that's fine." And Buffy, being lovely, this is the relationship stuff, just being the best. She's like, "I'll be right back." It's just like so cute and so beautiful. Yeah,
I marked that also because I think that's in episode one, isn't it?
I think so.
It's like Buffy's save the cat moment. Like Willow is the save the cat. It's like you realize that Buffy is cool because Buffy recognizes that Cordelia sucks and Willow is cool.
Yes.
Anyway, Xander and Angel. Whatever. I definitely used to see myself as Xander. I can I can still relate to him because I can remember being that guy in high school, but a lot less so as an adult. But I still think he's interesting. He's a very flawed character. That doesn't mean he's a bad character.
Well, one of my notes is like, Xander is the worst. And yes, there are moments where I hate him. But also, he's probably the most accurate depiction of a teenager. I myself... Yeah. Was also a Xander in high school. Like, you know, just very like selfish and self-serving in so many ways. So as an adult, I've got a different perspective of him now.
Yeah. It is interesting though. I think Angel is almost a non-character in this season. We get to places with Angel. I think mostly, well, stuff happens in season two, obviously, that makes him a much more compelling character. From my understanding, Angel was almost thrust upon the show. They had to include like spoilers for Buffy the Vampire. I'm gonna give you a little one here for season one. Angel is a romantic character, right?
Yes,
is a romance option for Buffy in this show, and was kind of thrust upon the show, I think, and you can feel it. Like you can, it's he is not fun or compelling particularly. No. I didn't think. He is very two-dimensional.
Every scene with him in it, I'm like, all right, I mean, this is like nice for Buffy to have like a bit of eye candy, but beyond sure. that, like, get out of here. I want to see her with her friends.
He's also fucking useless in season one. Like,
yeah, just, he really
just,
is.
He's just comes in, says something cryptic, and then never shows up when he like needs to be there to help out. Like, come on, dude, where are you? The format of the show: bring this shit back, monster of the week type stuff. The show gets more serialized as it goes on, but never loses its episodic structure, and it's its most pure in season one. In 44 minutes, you get a complete, fun, scary, heartfelt little story with a clear idea and point of view. Bing, bang, boom, what a treat. I was left, as you said, wanting to binge this. I started this season trepidatious. Like, how am I going to feel about this show? And instantly I was like, next episode, next episode, next episode, next episode. The best thing that's happened, I think, when watching this is after I finished watching season one, I started watching season two instantly. But not only that, I think this is one of the... This has really stoked me. My fiance Steph has never watched Buffy.
Wow.
Now, we weren't sitting down to watch it together, but she was in the room a couple of times while I was watching it, and she genuinely sat down and like started enjoying the show. And then between me watching episodes, I caught her watching episodes to catch up. We are now at the same point in season two. I'm going to be watching it together going forward. I'm fucking stoked. Like, I'm going to watch all of it together.
I stopped myself from going into season two because I really wanted to, but then I knew that knowing my brain, I'd get confused as to what happened when. But yeah, pretty much as soon as this podcast is finished recording, I'm jumping back in bed and binging season two.
Yeah. Steph is of our... generation of our ilk, so maybe it's just naturally appealing to her. She probably has some background affinity to it anyway, but the fact that she could look at this, and let's be honest, it's clunky. The visuals are clunky, you know? It's of a time.
Those fight scenes are of a particular choreography of the 90s and early 2000s, absolutely.
Yeah, not just the choreography, but the way it's shot. Oh, like, yeah. You know, it's and edited, especially the combat stuff and the costumes and the, like, all
I
of
gotta
it.
I got to say, though, as effects. I was rewatching episode one, just yesterday I was rewatching it, I was like, if I showed this to my students, they'd be like, oh. Every outfit they probably is in their closets now. So I'm like, at least they don't have like that stopping them from like enjoying the show. So maybe now's really the time to introduce it to the younger kids.
Do it. But I thought that was a huge tick in the show's favor beyond my bias that someone who'd never watched the show before was like gravitated towards it. Also, yeah, what you said, the heart of this show. This is where the magic truly lies. Buffy has heart. My memory of season one in particular is that it was silly, which is not true. But I was drawn so quickly into the show because every episode, amongst the silly demon costumes, the clunky stunts, and the twee dialogue, makes the time to make you give a shit. Because the characters give a shit. There are emotional stakes, either in the immediate sense or as the characters reflect on this week's adventure, how it might mirror their own lives. It's such a simple formula, and yet so hard to do right, but Buffy nails it right from the very beginning. The only complaint I have about this show, really, is that it's a travesty that we cannot watch it in its original 4x3 formatting if you're trying to stream it. We are stuck with these controversial, to say the least, HD remasters where, yes, they've made it fit the widescreen format, but that often means they've cropped that down from 4x3. They've actually made... We're seeing less of the image. Some occasions, they have been able to find the original footage, which was, I think, shot on 16... No, it wouldn't have been 16mm. Maybe it was 16mm. And then find the extra bits on the side, though that is controversial and has some problems as well. They've sort of glossed over some of the big flubs that somehow made into the show at one point. But yeah, I would give anything to be able to watch this in 4x3 with the original framing. Or if Disney, come on, guys, like, you've got the money, make the effort to give this a proper HD makeover. Like, let's get something out there that we can all watch and enjoy. And it's such an important part of the TV landscape for it to be treated so poorly like this.
Yeah,
is a fucking travesty.
Yeah, can you like? I mean, are they doing this to the Sopranos? Like,
that's a good question. No, I would love to,
because they shouldn't. I mean,
well, there the was... Sopranos was it originally 4x3? I think it might have, because it was on HBO. I think it might have been widescreen from the very beginning.
Oh, was it?
So it might have been a little bit easier.
But the question is, like, would it be? I mean, this is just like, there's such a misunderstanding by so many people of what Buffy really is and what it really means to the television landscape. I remember, like, when I, you know, moved into a share house when I was in my early 20s, mm-hmm. and, you know, I was studying creative writing, and, like, my focus was on screenwriting and being asked, oh, like, what's your favorite, like, film or TV show, and saying Buffy, and people being really confused and or laughing because yes. they actually didn't understand the importance. And I feel like either these streaming services or whoever is behind these decisions don't actually understand that it is, like, such a wonderful example of the medium and should be respected as such. And to, like, yep. play with that is actually super insulting and ridiculous.
Yeah, and it would make it so much easier for others to find it and for people to appreciate it if it just got treated better like that. Like, mm-hmm. it would just make it easier for us to be able to completely and full-throatedly recommend it to people, because it's not going to be as clunky an experience if they can watch it that way. Yeah, and I still will recommend it, absolutely, 100%. Yeah. But man, it would be such a treat. And it would, like, fuck, I would go out and buy a 4K. If it was properly done, I would 100% buy... like a HD remastered collection.
Absolutely.
In a second. Take my money. The question I had for you as well before we get to spoiler talk, the one thing that's probably outside of the fan community that people know Buffy for is for its, like, dialogue. People can talk about, like, mm-hmm. the Whedon-esque, how that dialogue or that, like, quippiness has made its way into, like, other TV shows and even movies and stuff. People talk about, especially if you don't like Marvel, about how, like, that sort of sensibility of dialogue writing made its way into, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe and stuff like that. How are you finding it in season one? How are you finding it returning to it? Does it still work for you? Did it always work for you? Like, what's your feeling on it?
I think without this show's, you know, its own vernacular, that is Buffy. And yes, I think it can be hard to remove it from how much it has leaked out into pop culture now as a whole. It worked for me back then, and watching it, I was like, well, this is Buffy. This is the tone of it. This is how the characters in this world speak to one another. Are there some lines where I'm like, oh, it's a bit dorky, but that's the show and it's 1997, and at no point was I like, oh, I really don't like the way they speak. That's what the show is. That is how they speak. That is the world. And if you can't get down with that, then you're probably not going to like a large majority of the show. Sorry about it, but yeah, you got to respect it. It paved the way of that way of doing things. And it's, that is the voice of the show. Mm-hmm. You're either on board or you're not.
I think when it worked really well. I think that times that it doesn't work, two things helped to save me. One, mm-hmm. the performances were strong enough that even the dialogue was a little bit clunkier, a little bit too twee, was still presented in a way that didn't make it so cringy, right? And it's funny, I watched or scanned through the original unaired Buffy pilot, which is very similar to episode one of the show, essentially. Has a different Willow, though, and you can feel the difference between, like, an Allison Hannigan presenting the Willow lines versus somebody who's not Allison Hannigan, and, like, why she was cast, because she just has a way of making that sort of stuff work. Mm-hmm. Like, so that helps. And two, also, the other part of it is, when it's not working, it's kind of still fun on a campy level. And this show is campy as well. Like, absolutely. It's campy as fuck.
This is camp horror.
100%. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
It also, I find that sort of dialogue doesn't, like, infect the serious scenes. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't undercut the emotion when you need the emotion. It's more the banter in between those moments is where it appears, or especially when Buffy's having a fight scene. Again, very Peter Parker. She gets very quippy with vampires, like, always has an opening line and an ending line and stuff like that. But the emotional stuff doesn't get, like, invaded by that. And so that it's where it should be. It's not where it shouldn't be. And so that helps a lot as well.
I also think, like, and the show I'm about to mention is nowhere near as good as Buffy, but certainly a show that was coming around somewhat around the same time. You know, I'm thinking of like Gilmore Girls, right? There has a distinct way in which they communicate with one another. And I tried to rewatch that show, but it's so straight now, I just can't. Like, it's so heterosexual.
Wow.
That it's, I kind of hate it. And I loved that show so much. But, you know, people would always complain about the way in which they spoke. And it's like, yeah, either you like it or you don't. If you can't get around that, and that's fine if you can't, but that's the tone of the show. That's the style of the show. And I don't think you can tear them from one another. Mm-hmm.
How would you score season one of Buffy out of 5 stars?
Mate, I have no idea. I left it blank. I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know how to begin. Like, I guess it's like, for a first season though, it's really good.
Yeah. Super strong.
Do you feel like I don't know, like a 4, and then like every other season is pretty much a 5. Like, I don't know.
Let's
like,
not pretend season 4 is particularly good.
Season 4 is like a 3.
I'm really looking forward to going back, because I do wonder like if I'm going to find some things in season 4 that I appreciate more now as an adult.
There are some good things in season 4.
Oh, there's definitely some good things.
Like,
definitely some good things.
Absolutely. But there is an element of that season which is so atrocious. That's what sticks out. But I'm sure there's going to be heaps in there that I love.
What's the element? Can you give it a name?
Adam.
Oh, okay, Adam. Yeah, Adam sucks.
Oh, and do you want me to say the other name? There's 2 names.
Well, there was
a... the other name, though, does contribute to the development of Buffy in a way that is really important.
We're way off topic here.
Sorry.
If the answer is Riley, right, is the second name, that's the bit I'm actually most interested in reassessing now, as I'm reassessing Angel right this second. I'm like, maybe I'll feel different about Riley come this before. I might not.
I think I think I will feel the same way about the character as a person, like absolute snooze fest. But I think I will see like his allure or importance to a character like Buffy and why she would be drawn to him. Yeah, I think I'll probably see that differently.
I think it's going to make a bit more sense to me.
Yes.
Yeah, rather than just being, this is an angel. I think 4 is the right score. I could maybe tip back to 3.5 because there's some clunk and like there's a couple of episodes that don't work as well as others. But there is so much. It's so strong fundamentally. And let's just, fuck it. It's our podcast. Yeah, I'm giving it a 4. It's excellent. At a very fundamental, basic level. And, like, I had a great time with it. 12 episodes, 44 minutes each. It was a breeze. I happily watched it and went straight into season 2. Like, I can't endorse any more than that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we dive into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who has enjoyed the podcast over the years to please review us on Apple Podcasts and or Spotify or whatever future streaming service exists. We'd also love you to share Hunting Seasons with friends and family who you think might also enjoy listening. We might be done, but there are 200 review episodes. You're welcome. Plus a bunch of off-topic, hot-topic episodes you and your loved ones can trawl through for years to come.
Next week, we'll be back one last time for a very special look back and goodbye episode. So if there is anything you would like to ask us or messages you would like to send us, you can write to us or send us an audio recording to contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter @huntingscast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
I'll be honest, I don't have a lot prepared for this section.
I just don't really know.
I don't really know where to start. We could try and like pull it apart from a character by character or overarching storyline. Probably the best way to do it is just run through each episode quickly and sort of give our thoughts on it. I guess we should just include the first two episodes as basically the one episode. Welcome to the Hellmouth and the Harvest. It may have even aired as a feature length.
It certainly felt like it.
It's definitely, you know, two parts of the same storyline. How do you feel about like the pilot for Buffy, the first episode? We're introduced to Buffy. She arrives in Sunnydale as a new student at Sunnydale High. She meets Willow. She meets Xander. She meets Jesse. She meets Cordelia and Giles, and then reluctantly doesn't want to be a vampire slayer, but has to be a vampire slayer because that's her, you know, fated obligation. How'd that work for you?
Every time I watch the first episode of Buffy, I remember being in either year 11 or year 12 media, and my media teacher like would show it. And you know, just like talking about like subversion of like tropes and stuff, and particularly that very first sequence.
Yeah.
Right?
Iconic.
Yeah, absolutely iconic. Loved it.
Especially for media teachers.
Yeah. I too plan to teach it every single day.
Excellent.
It does work as a pilot. I think we start off with, this kind of horror homage, camp horror, subversion of like expectations, all of that stuff. So that's a really strong introduction. We then meet all of these characters and just, you know, watching a show back in 1997 that introduced this new group of friends, right? So we have Buffy, sure, and she meets Xander, Willow and Jesse, and to introduce that set of friends and then to like kill one of them off is so strong and so clever, right? To immediately understand that there are stakes in this world, and yes, we can have like silly dialogue, and yes, it feels like a silly fun teen show, but there are stakes here, and there are times where you need to be really concerned for the people within the story. All of it works. And, you know, we mentioned that scene between Willow and Buffy where we understand, one, Willow is an absolute sweetie pie and is, like, overwhelmingly concerned with, you know, others, you know, are they comfortable? Don't worry about me. I'm fine. And Buffy going, oh, I'm actually, like, a loving, protective person and I've got you is incredible. We understand Xander and both Jesse are, you know, teenage boys, absolute creeps, don't understand boundaries, all of that stuff. But, you know, Xander has a wonderful, cute friendship with Willow. Cordelia is that high school mean girl. And good Lord, do we get so much more from her later on? Like,
even though I got to say, I didn't mention Charisma Carpenter in my review, but she is fucking great as Cordelia as well. Like,
she's so good.
Super fun. Like, she's those characters funny. Can be very easy to hate, but there's something about that's probably possibly the way she's written, but also the performance. Like, I enjoy any time Cordelia is in a
scene.
It's
also great that, yes, she is a mean girl, and every time she's mean to Willow, I'm like, how dare you? But she also, like, just calls, you know, guys like Xander and Jesse out on their stuff. I mean, like, no, ew, what are you talking about? Which is a nice element to her as well.
The show also actively makes fun of her most ridiculous traits as well. Like, it's poking fun at her. She is not just the snooty bad guy that you're meant to hate. You have fun around Cordelia.
Yes, absolutely. Strong introduction of character, tone, and the world itself. Yeah, Big fan.
Yeah, it's a perfect pilot in that regard. The Jesse stuff is so fun. And in my head, this is because of years of like absorbing Buffy media and stuff like that, and probably listening to the commentaries and stuff like that on the DVDs. I thought he was in the opening credits of the first episode. And I was like, oh, maybe because they've split the episode in half, they couldn't be bothered redoing that. No, it never happened. It was just something that was talked about on the audio commentaries that they wanted to do, but they couldn't have the budget for it. Like, it would have been a great play to introduce this character. They're in the opening titles. They die in the first episode. They're out of the opening titles. Like, what a great little subversion, as you said, much like that opening scene was. But no, they couldn't do it. But in my head, I was like, oh, that happens.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh, the other thing I like as well when you get to the second half of this... No, actually, the end of the first half, I think it is how Buffy is directly tied to Willow's peril in the first episode, where she's like... Buffy's like, you need to get out there. You just need to, like, you know, put yourself out there more, be more confident or whatever. And, like, so Willow goes and does that when a guy approaches her, and then Buffy's immediately put her in danger and needs to save her. I was like, so Buffy cannot sit back and just... not take responsibility. She has to save this person that she's sort of encouraged to do something dangerous here. I love that in terms of just pulling Buffy into this. Her responsibility is inescapable.
Like, yeah. It's a perfect Buffy moment, because like that is echoed throughout the show, and it's always done really, really well, is like Buffy really doesn't want to do this. Like, she really, truly doesn't want to do it. But because of her connections to others and her feeling of responsibility for others, she always just has to, and therefore you just love her every time, because you know how much she's just like, I just want to, like, I don't know, make out with a boy. That's all I want to do. Exactly. I want to hang out with my friends.
Yes.
But when the chips are down, I will never let anyone else be hurt. Yeah, I love the show.
Skipping ahead to what I've been watching of season two so far, that's been really strong at the start of this season as well, is just the fight to just have a normal life. And there's a couple episodes in here that are very much like that as well. But yeah, it's like, it's just this constant battle for her. The two things that happen to Xander that really, really throw him under the bus as a character. Number one, he gets over Jesse dying. Apparently, one of his closest friends.
The fact they never mention him again is insane. And this show's really good at like remembering the history and why certain things are important, and bringing things back that like happened, you know, three or four seasons earlier, being like, oh my gosh, yes, they are real people that have these experiences. They have lived through them. They haven't forgotten them, except for Jesse.
Yeah. So a little bit of Buffy trivia. Again, slight spoilers, but not really spoilers for future seasons of Buffy. There is one episode, only one episode of the show that Xander is not in. The only two characters in every episode are Willow and Buffy. Xander's missing from one, an episode called Talking with Dead People. It's a season 7 episode. Apparently, he was meant to be talking with somebody, a dead person in that, which is what the episode's about. Yeah. It was meant to be Jesse, but for some reason that didn't work out. And I was like, that would have been fucking cool.
Yeah, there's a couple of... Okay, that's interesting. And the other missed opportunity in that episode because of... Was it scheduling or whatever it was? But it was meant to be a character that meant a lot to me.
Well,
it's
funny... going into that specifically, obviously, that's a big, big, big spoiler.
Yeah.
Scheduling, I think, was always... talked about. I do wonder now with
if
hindsight
she didn't want to come back,
whether there was maybe resilience to coming back. That person did not want to return.
Which is
for other reasons.
Valid.
Just a thought.
Not going to criticize that. But it's always like a missed opportunity whenever I watch that episode, because I know that was the intention.
It would have ruined you.
That's true.
I think there was also about 5 years back or something like that, was a Buffy reunion, which by which I mean it wasn't like the COVID reunions where everyone was getting together and reading scripts. It was like, I think it was the EW or someone like that magazine had got everyone together and did a photo shoot. But notably, they didn't all do the photo shoot together. Like, it was done in bits and pieces and then like photoshopped together later. And it's like, these tensions existed for a long, long time, and it got complicated behind the scenes. The other bit about Xander in the pilot episode that stood out to me this time around watching it was when Buffy, I think at very early in the episode, drops her books on the ground. And Xander comes running from the other side of the hallway to force a meet cute. Was like one of the most Xander moments ever, but also like, fuck, you're a creep. What is wrong with you?
He is absolutely a creep, which is why I think he's you know, probably the most accurate depiction of a teenager, just being like, I will have this romance. I will have it. But that then ends up bringing up like one of my favorite lines of that episode. And there's a lot of them. But when he returns her steak and he's like, the only thing I could like assume is that you're making a tiny fence, which is just great. It's a great line.
Another thing I also noticed about Buffy, though, she like has hit, like, you know, gets a shoulder bump and drops her books like 3 times this season. It's like, fucking, isn't she the Slayer, super strong, great balance? Like, why does she keep like having these little meet cute dropping book moments? Very weird. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great point that I never thought about. But I realize now, looking back, you know, hindsight's 2020, is that I should have been like shoulder checking girls I had crushes on throughout high school, just hoping to pick up their books.
Going to learn one thing from watching rom-coms and Buffy, yeah. Episode 3, Witch. Hi, Amy.
I was like, when I saw her, I was like, oh my gosh, it's Amy. I didn't realize she was in there so early. Yeah.
There's a couple of characters, actually, I was surprised were in there as early as they were. And again, skipping ahead to season 2, there's a character that I knew was in the show for a bit, becomes very important later on. I was like, oh, it's that person. Anyway. This is a very strong, I think this is why it was probably their episode 2, technically, if you consider the first two the pilot. Like, this sets the tone for what a weekly episode of Buffy is. This is a strong high school is hell-like episode. The theme being the parents who are living vicariously through their kids metaphor. And, like, I don't have a lot of thoughts about this episode. It just plays out really strong. It's like the first adventure that Buffy and Xander and Willow have together and with Giles outside of the vampires in episode 1. The only other thought I had about this episode, it's not the last time we'll see someone dancing and bursting into flames on this show.
True. it's a real motif.
It comes back. I don't know. Did you have any particular thoughts about Witch? Aside from it just being super strong, I thought.
It was really strong. I think that is the biggest takeaway. Like, Amy is this new character within the group, within the world. So we understand that she's probably going to be central to what's happening.
No. Anytime a character gets introduced that you've never seen before, a student or a teacher, you're like, something awful's going to happen to you. That's a shame.
You're either going to die or you're a bad guy. this is absolutely true. And that I'm okay with that.
Nothing totally wrong with fine. That. That's the way the show
went. But what I enjoyed was, because I hadn't watched this episode in so long. So when Buffy and Giles go to Amy's house and are talking to her mum and she sees the brownies, because there's a lot we learn later on about Amy and who Amy is. And she sees the brownies and then Buffy goes, oh my gosh, you're Amy. I went, I didn't.
Oh, you've forgotten.
I'd forgotten that, like, they had swapped bodies. And I was I was like, what a twist. You got me again. So it was a solid episode. I was engaged. The character of Amy is really sweet and lovely. The ending is, like, horrifying. Those eyes on the statue made me laugh. Yes. But I was like, great ending.
I remember that. I knew that was coming. I was like, it looks awful, but still great.
It's so good. Solid episode. Really enjoyed.
I immediately texted Paul after watching that episode. Paul of the Swapcast podcast was like, there's another body swap episode of Buffy. It's episode 3. It's early on. So you can review that. Episode 4, Teacher's Pet. Our core cast, the main three, not including Giles, each have a dating episode this season. This is Xander's dating episode. I wouldn't say it's a strong high school is hell episode, because it's not necessarily a universal experience, I don't think. But the older lady preying on the young boy motif is strong in this one, for sure.
Yeah, certainly is. I mean, gosh, we really, and even until very recently, adults really enjoy writing a story in which a teenager is falling in love with an adult, a sexual predator. I mean, Dawson's Creek first season also has this storyline. It's very strong. It's really fucked up. You know, I was obsessed with Pretty Little Liars back in the day. That goes throughout that series run, and it is the central and one of the, if not the most important romance of the show, a teacher with a student. Gross. Disgusting. So whenever I see this, I'm like, why? Yes, things were different, but surely it was always wrong for teachers to either be pursuing or seduced by students. So mm-hmm. that's always a shocking thing to say. But beyond that,
we can't pretend the show was condoning it. Like,
this is true.
She's a giant praying mantis who eats her prey alive.
I think the
show has a fairly strong perspective on whether this is good or bad.
I assume they were in love. Yes, absolutely. Yes, this show is different in that respect. Like, Dawson's Creek is very much like, oh, it's a valid romance. It's just like, you know, star-crossed lovers tragedy type thing, which is should never be the vibe. Buffy does very much say, like, this woman is literally a predator. We also get, you know, early signs of Xander's terribleness, in which he is talking to Buffy, who is warning him that this woman is dangerous and a bug. I believe she says the word bug like 15 times and he's not getting it. And he says some really terrible, selfish things to her, being like, well,
throw his friends under the bus so fucking quickly.
So quickly. And it's just so full of like vitriol of like, well, you're not fucking me, so you're a bitch. It's like, whoa, bro.
Yeah. The incel energy coming off Xander is super strong.
So that steam heat of incel energy. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's always like shocking to see, but I'm like, there's the Xander I know and hate. There he is again. But yeah, and that will come back time and time again.
It really will.
Particularly, there is a scene later on in the show that I refuse to forgive Xander for, in which he absolutely throws Buffy under the bus. Oh, God. I really want to review the entire show now because there's so much I have to say.
We'll say a few little things I enjoyed about this episode. In terms of, I think it's just a great example of like the Buffy cares about people stuff. Mm-hmm. The start of the episode, she's in that, I think it's a biology lesson, and Dr. Gregory Professor Gregory or Teacher Gregory, whatever. And
so
like,
sad.
He seems like he's obviously, I like the way he's written too. He is like, sort of like he's like a strict but fair teacher. Like, he expects more from Buffy, but he's encouraging to her and gives her, you know, a fair shot and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, pumps her up to try and get her to be better. Yep. And Buffy responds like she respects that. And so when he dies, she is visibly fucking upset. This guy she spent one scene with, and I care because she cares about that. And that's all got to do with Sarah Michelle Gellar's performance. Mm-hmm. It's so strong, and it like...
And that comes back. That episode, absolutely. Like, her... And this is a character we've like seen in one scene, and you
one
are heartbroken. But they also do it. Sorry, you go on.
I was going to say, because it works on two ways. Because the scene establishes his character and why she respects him so quickly, and then her emotional reaction seems so genuine and real. Mm-hmm. It's like you can't help but remember that teacher that you respected in school or whatever, and you would have a similar reaction. I think it's just the execution of that is so strong and so simple. It's like, bravo.
Yeah. I think like, and going backwards to Witch is, you know, that's another great example of we see Buffy's capacity to care for others. Like,
yes, absolutely.
She wants to be a cheerleader as well and is like meeting this girl for the first time who's like really going through it and has like received a lot of like negative messaging from her mum. And Buffy in like the smallest of ways just tries to be like, you'll be fine. Like, and when it doesn't work out, you'll be fine. Like, this is not like, you don't have to follow that path if you really don't want to. You're great, whatever. She's really sweet with Amy, and that means a lot.
Something just occurred to me as well. I think like Buffy, every episode basically has to sort of uncover the mystery, right? There's some amount of detective work going on, and sometimes it's a little more pat than others. But one of the reasons that makes her good at that job is that she genuinely listens and pays attention to the people around her. Like, the brownies thing is the perfect example, right? Willow tells this little tidbit. She used to come over and we used to gorge on brownies, right? Mm-hmm. Later on, Amy's upset she didn't make the cut. She's like, how about we just have a brownie bed like binge at my place? And Amy's like, ew, no, can't do that. Which is weird because obviously that was something Willow told her was important. Then she sees the brownies and twigs, that's Amy, really. And it's like, but that doesn't come from her being like a master detective. It just becomes because she pays fucking attention to people, which makes her great. Little detail in Teacher's Pet that I loved, just the campiness moment of it. There's a scene, I think it's the scene where the teacher asks Xander to come by her house that night, and he leaves the room, and then she like opens up two pieces of bread and like dumps some bugs onto it, and then just like eats a sandwich. But like, why put in bread? Why why not just eat the bugs? Why have to be a bug sandwich? I just thought that was hilarious.
Why put a meatball in bread? You know what I mean? It's like,
fair.
Just because she's a bug doesn't mean like she doesn't understand the importance and wonder of bread. It's great.
Fair enough. Also, I thought the most, and I wasn't sure whether the show understood this or not, but just how rich it is. Because we don't know this about Angel yet. We don't. Mm-hmm. You're not meant to know he's a vampire. Mm-hmm. But like the whole episode's like the dangers of like the older, the adult like preying on the young. Yeah. And like the episode ends with like an Angel and Buffy moment. I was like, this guy's 250 fucking years old. What the fuck is you talking about?
Disgusting. This isn't cool.
Disgusting. Episode 5, Never Kill a Boy on the First Date. Mm. This is the Buffy dating episode.
Yeah.
In which Buffy just wants to be a normal kid and wants to date a normal guy, but has to deal with the Anointed One prophecy, the damn Slayer prophecies, and her responsibilities as the Chosen One come to rear their ugly head. I thought it was a great Buffy-centered episode. It very much is focused on that theme that runs through the whole thing, which is like trying to balance her real high school life and her Slayer life. But I don't know if I had a lot more to say about than that. I did like the episode.
Yeah, I did too, in terms of like what it means for Buffy and once again, like sacrificing and the safety of others.
Particularly that last scene between her and Giles was wonderful. Yeah.
What I do need to say though is that in watching it, it's so funny. The character of Owen is played specifically to be this kind of like lovely guy who's like, you know, deep and insightful and just like very, very interested in getting to know Buffy. Every single thing that character says to Buffy now, if it was written now, would be a huge insult and a fucking massive red flag. He is so insulting to her intelligence in almost every single scene. He's very, like, all he does is, like, talk about his interests.
Mm-hmm.
I also found it hilarious when he's talking about Emily Dickinson being kind of a recluse and lonely, and we now know that she was absolutely banging her friend Sue every other day. But this guy is a wanker.
Yes.
He doesn't know anything about her. He's, like, projecting all of this stuff on her. He's, like, ladies and gents and NBs out there, if anyone speaks to you the way that this character Owen speaks to Buffy, run in the other direction. They are a pseudo-intellectual douchebag. That's what I have to say about that.
Well, his whole thing is like, I don't know, he's deep about like death and stuff like that. And so like he gets excited by the idea of going to the crematorium. But he's like a fucking liability. Like, I think what makes that strong is that you can sort of see the appeal.
Oh, absolutely. I get the appeal.
But you can also 100% at the end of the episode, this is not going to work both. He's just not a good match for Buffy. And this is a great example of why Buffy's dating life will never be normal. It's just not going to work out that she can date normies in any regard. But yeah, he's not cool.
He's not.
We don't like him. Episode 6, The Pact. Xander and 4 bullies get possessed by the spirits of hyenas or just by hyenas. In my mind, this is one of the episodes that I remembered being a bit cringy or something. I don't know. I was really worried about this episode. It does have some weird moments. There's a really long, like, slow motion scene. Yeah,
you and I watched this together, and we started laughing at how long the scene was where they're doing the cool slow mo war.
Yeah.
We started laughing, and then it went for another 3 minutes. I want to say, like, it was just going and going.
It was like they had like, we don't quite have enough to make 44 minutes, so we just put this 2 minute slow mo walk in.
I mean, that's what I used to do when I would make like fem/fan videos. Like, if I really wanted to stretch out disgusting song I was playing over images of Naomi and Emily on Skins, so much slow-mo. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see where I got that from.
But I think I really enjoyed the episode, actually. I think it's a strong high school as hell episode. Xander falls in with the wrong crowd, becomes one of them, you know, the bullies and the mean guys. And like, you wonder how much this is Xander's true nature, really.
The things he says to Willow.
Oh my God.
I cannot.
You said this to me at the time we were watching it. You were like, fuck, if I was Buffy when I saw him Was he? I'm quitting like math or whatever, so I don't ever need to see you or your pasty face ever again. Then laughs in her face, and like Buffy should have like socked him in the fucking
Buffy
nose.
She like should have ripped his head off and been like, "No, like you just can't speak to Willow that way." No. Yeah, that's why I could never be the Slayer, because my like righteous rage would people would be dead everywhere. Yeah, it wouldn't be good.
But yeah, I liked that episode, and I while it's a dorky premise, it sort of works in that regard. It's also kind of disturbing to think about, like, yes, these bullies are like, you know, dehumanized pretty quickly as being the worst, but and Xander was one of these, ate a pig alive.
Disgusting. And then I couldn't, that was so upsetting, that cute, and they chose the cutest little pig.
Yeah.
The cutest little pig, yeah, and then they piggy. Eat it. It's Got so eaten. Upsetting.
And then the bullies, but not Xander, end up eating the principal alive. What the fuck, show?
And I love they had to like reiterate that at the end that Xander did not eat the human. He ate the pig. Did not eat the person.
But what you need to like think about, right, is that at the end of the episode we find out that Xander is pretending to not remember what he did, including when he tried to sexually assault Buffy as well. We might put that out there. But the then Giles is like, I didn't say anything about you having memory loss. And and Xander is obviously extremely ashamed of his behavior in that last moment. Mm-hmm. But then let's remember that four other people do remember eating a principal alive. Yep. What the fuck happened to
well,
them?
I just like, yeah, absolutely. They're destroyed forever. But like, I remember when we were watching that scene where, you know, we find out that Xander is pretending to not remember. Mm. And he's like asking his two friends, he's like, oh, I didn't say or do anything too crazy, did I? And they're like, no, it's okay. It's insane to remember saying the most horrible, damaging things to Willow and trying to sexually assault Buffy. And the reaction is not to like, his reaction is to pretend it didn't happen, as opposed to, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry that I did and said those things. That's not how I feel. You are very important to me and I'm deeply ashamed of it, and just apologize.
Yeah.
And so they have to go off and like deal with the ramifications of his actions. Anyway, once again, Xander's Xander, the Xander I love to hate, rears his ugly head. Yeah.
I'm getting to a point in season two I'm happy about, where a love interest is being reintroduced for Willow. I'm like, thank fucking God she can finally get over fucking Xander for a while.
The worst.
Just deserves better than this piece of shit that she pines over and just does not give a shit about. Any other thoughts on that episode particularly? Oh, something that also came up watching the unaired pilot. Stephen Tobolowsky originally played in the unaired pilot, played the principal, the original principal.
I can see that.
Yeah, I was the guy that was playing in the show, I don't know the actor's name, had a very Stephen Tobolowsky vibe, and I was like, yeah, that made sense. Episode 7, Angel. This is Angel's backstory episode. So we find out that he's a vampire with a soul.
Oh my goodness.
There's some insanity in this episode. Darla, you know, with two handguns shooting at Buffy and Angel.
When
such a
she
weird
pulled
thing.
Out those guns, I was like, oh my gosh, there's guns in Buffy. And obviously, like, we see guns in, like, season 4 and stuff.
Especially season 4.
But but it's just, like, not really something you see very often. Just seeing a vampire with a gun is pretty funny.
It was really funny.
Really,
and just, like,
me.
The way that Julie Benz is, like,
there's
holding
no,
those two pistols.
No training. There's no training at all. She had no idea how to hold them. It was great.
I do love Darla, though.
Me too.
Yeah, we get more Darla. Darla appears later on in different ways. I tell you what, though. Buffy forgave Angel real quick. I know that Darla framed him, but he did seem very tempted to munch on Joyce. And, like, even just thinking about it probably should mean, you know,
yeah,
he's
if
a no-go zone.
Love interest is even slightly tempted to kill your mum, probably don't
just
invest in that relationship.
Even
further.
Just a little bit, just like just a little nibble. Probably a chance to say, yeah, no, this isn't going to work.
Red flag.
Mm-hmm. Red flag. Did you have any other thoughts on the episode?
I had forgotten in season one that Buffy didn't. It took so long for Buffy to find out that Angel was a vampire. For whatever reason, I thought it happened almost like in episode 1 when they meet in the alley. And then he, like, in my memory, it was like he proved himself to be like a good vampire. And that's not what happens in season 1 at all. Mm-hmm. We don't know that he's a vampire. We just think he's some guy who's helping out or whatever. Maybe like, you know, a Van Helsing or something in the background. But then we find out he's fanged up. Good. Love some Darla. You know, the vampire with a soul, tragic, love it. Why not?
I've forgotten the name of it, thank God. What's the book series that got turned into a movie series that was about falling in love with a vampire?
Twilight,
thank you.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah. It's like Twilight. You can't know straight away they're a vampire. It has to be revealed as things go on. You get,
Say it. Yeah. That's a line from Twilight.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're in the woods. Once. Okay. And he wants her to say that he is a vampire. The Twilight started as Buffy fan fiction. So
yeah, obviously.
Yeah. Just for those at home that didn't know, I told someone as like, you know, the trickle-down economics of fan fiction, which is Buffy to Twilight, Twilight to 50 Shades of Grey. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Just an endless circle until we finally come back to, I don't know, maybe something good. As good as Buffy. Who knows?
I mean, it's even like, it's her name's what, Bella instead of Buffy, right? It's like a B vowel, two letters,
yeah,
a pseudo vowel and a vowel. Mm-hmm. Like they weren't even really trying with the renaming and stuff like that. I did think about that too. If this was released today, after episode one, Reddit would already have figured out that Angel was a vampire. Was like somehow a good vampire. Do you know what I mean? Like it wasn't subtle. You know, he's there at night. Yeah. He disappears in the shadows, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder how much of a shock it really was to us in 1997. Probably was.
Yeah.
Episode 8, iRobot Eugene. This is Willow's dating episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think a good high school is hell episode. This is the perils of online dating in the late 90s.
Jeez, weren't we just flooded with that narrative? Which is true. It was absolutely accurate. It was totally. The wild, wild west.
It was catfishing before catfishing too.
I think it's the first episode of like Degrassi where Emma is like also, or maybe not the first, no, the first episode is the period episode. But in season one of Degrassi, Emma meets a creep online as well. Like this story was like constantly being told and it's an important message, particularly for people of our generation who really had no idea what we were even navigating at all. Poor Willow.
That comes down to Allison Hannigan though, but like,
yeah,
like this is the difference between a Xander being, I mean, the characters obviously, but Xander being hit on by a teacher and being all like, fuck you, Buffy, you don't want to have sex with me. And Willow who, you know, why can't I have a boyfriend? Fucking Xander never pays attention to me. This guy wants to date me. But I love the bit when she meets Malcolm and she's like, there's this giant, like 8 foot tall metal demon standing in front of her saying that he loves her. And she's like, but you lied to me. It's like, it's a fucking demon, mate. Like, why is that the thing that you hung up on?
Why are we focusing on that, Willow? There's other things. Like, yeah, as we were watching, I remember being there. I'm like, if I found out that someone I was talking to, someone who slid into my DMs, and we met up, and they were a giant metal creature, I wouldn't be hurt they had lied to me. Yeah. I'd be horrified that I was about to get my head ripped off and the world was ending. But, you know, we all have our different priorities and that's okay.
We are introduced to Ms. Calendar for the first time. A bit of a Giles romantic interest.
Yep. What she called a techno-pagan?
A techno-pagan. What a concept. Which made me laugh
so much. It's nonsense. What does that mean? That it's absolute nonsense. I loved it.
That just all of the stuff around like discussing the internet and it's not inaccurate. It's just because it's so in its infancy is what's so fun to watch about like that discussing about like how more web pages were accessed than more emails were sent than snail mail this year or whatever it was. It's like wow, that was a time when we were like transitioning from. Like, you and I are currently talking to each other 3 hours away over a video call, recording a podcast.
And I can actually see your face and it's not 3 pixels. Yeah.
Yeah. But then when they record this, upload it to the internet, and people listen to us as they're off their phones while they're driving in their cars and on mm-hmm. the, like, fucking hell. Technology is, just to think about, like, Buffy talking about, like, techno stuff with the guy at the computer. Oh, man, it's mm-hmm. just, it's a wild time to think
it's
about.
It's a nice little flashback.
It
I quite
really,
enjoy
really
it,
is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too. I also love the little moment at the end of this episode. It's a really good example of when, like, Buffy gets character comedy right, when the three of them are sitting down, Xander, Willow, and Buffy, and they're talking about, like, you know, I can never have a dating I'm interested in a vampire. I dated a praying mantis. I dated this, you know, demon as well or whatever. We can never have a normal dating life. Ha, 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 ha. And then, like, the look on their face, just the hold on them, just, like, the realization their dating lives are doomed forever, and they just cut to credits without any music or anything.
It's very good.
It was a perfect little moment, that one. Mm-hmm. Anything else about the episode you want to talk about particularly?
I don't think so.
Just Buffy. Buffy being great. Little investigative investigator again. Episode 9, The Puppet Show. Mystery demon killing students for hearts and brains. They think it's the dummy. Turns out he's a demon hunter. I've watched this twice, this episode. Mm. Very little of it sticks with me. This, to me, is the weakest episode of the season.
Agree. Yeah, because we watched this one together as well. And, yeah, we remembered hearing or even thinking at the time that the pack was probably the weakest link.
Yes.
But we both kind of, you know, rather enjoyed that episode. And then we were watching The Puppet Show. And I was like, this doesn't feel as up to snuff as the rest. I think this is certainly the weakest episode. Mm. I don't know. It's just simply less engaging.
I think there's no strong connection to, like, one of our core characters, nor is there, like, say with, like, the witch, a strong connection to, like, a student or someone like mm-hmm. that. So there's no real anchor in that. I guess it's meant to be Sid the dummy, but it's introduced too late that he's actually, we don't start talking to him openly until late in the episode. And then this concept of him being a demon hunter is kind of, I don't know, empty and innocuous. There's
because
one conversation
so late,
between
I'm like,
him and Buffy. Yeah.
What? What's happening? That realization came far too late. Because we had learned, like, maybe, like, halfway or three quarters of the episode through and, like, I don't know, Buffy is, like, teaming up with a puppet could have been quite fun and silly.
Yeah. It did need to be subvert. It need to, like, get to that subversive twist in, like, at the end of the first act rather than as late as it comes mm-hmm. in the episode, I think. Because it just didn't give enough time to really do much of it. Because even then, I think, like, Buffy and the demon hunter have this kind of heart-to-heart about, like, their responsibilities or whatever. They're singing the rafters. And then Sid disappears for another, like, 10 minutes of the episode until he just comes back right at the end. We don't really know what happened to him or where he went. I don't remember. Maybe I wasn't paying enough attention. And then he dies because he fulfills his, like, last thing. It's over. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Bye.
Bye. Episode 10, Nightmares. Mm. Everyone's dreams become reality. I've got a theory. Some kid is dreaming and we're all stuck inside his wacky Broadway nightmare.
Love that.
This was like one of those examples where they introduced Wendell, the character in the classroom. And it's like, Cordelia's like, Wendell's in Cordelia's life. I'm like, I'm sorry, Wendell, for whatever's about to happen to
R.I.P.
you.
R.I.P. Yeah.
Quite die, but had a bad time. Yeah. Fun episode, fun concept. I think what I like most about this episode, it's not necessarily specific about one of our characters. It's like all of them. We're getting a little bit of insight into like what their anxieties are, what makes them tick. But I think it's also there's going to be at least one nightmare in there that you're going to relate to. Like mine is Willow's, her nightmare about being thrust on stage and not knowing the words to the song she's meant to sing was the same anxiety dream I had the night before the opening night of every show I ever did through high school. Like I always had that dream of like there's this scene that we never rehearsed and everyone else knows the lines but I don't.
Yeah.
Like, I always had that dream.
What's wild to me is we see Buffy's dad, which I had no memory of, and he plays pretty much no part in the show moving forward from what I can remember.
Basically nothing, yeah. It's a non-event almost.
Yeah, so seeing him, I'm like, whoa, I don't like this. I don't like seeing him. Obviously, it's a relatable fear of many teenagers.
And Sarah Michelle Gellar is fucking awesome in that scene where he
truly,
like, oh, it's like she feels like, or he's telling her that she's the reason they got divorced. Yeah.
Yeah. So that part of it is great, but it very much felt to me, I was like, oh, yes, this is season one. This is the beginning before they've worked out like all the dynamics and stuff, because Buffy's relationship with Joyce is so important. To have this other factor in it, I was like, no, I don't like it. But for what it was, it worked. Yeah.
It's what we also spend. I'm trying to remember. There's talk about Willow and Xander's parents. There's one time where Willow, I think in the online dating episode with Willow, she goes home and then the doorbell rings and one of the nerdy guys is there or whatever. And like she's like, oh, Dad, you forgot your keys again or something like that, right? So there's like they're talking about their parents. Do we ever meet Willow's parents? Do we ever meet Xander's parents?
No.
I don't think so.
I think the thing is we hear Xander's parents quite a lot, like them fighting and stuff.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like upstairs.
Yeah.
But no, I think there's even a line where – I believe they mention even in this season that we – like even Xander or Willow rarely sees Xander's parents or family, because that's why he's always at Willow's house. But yeah, no, that it's parents other than Joyce –
Joyce is the one parent, like throughout the entire show, basically, that has any significance in these teenagers' lives. I think it makes sense. It just feels like an oddity.
For teenagers, like it absolutely makes sense. Yeah.
And also, do we really care enough? Do we need to add these characters in? Because you see that too sometimes in shows when you start to include the parents in these things. When the stakes get big, I think shows feel like they have to include them somehow as well. And I just don't think we don't need it. We've got leave room for the people we really care about to have their moment.
And I think like it makes sense in terms of like what this show wants to be about, which is like the nightmare of high school and all of those nightmarish aspects that you are experiencing in real life, you absolutely hide from your parents. So to include them, I think, confuses the message.
Any other thoughts on nightmares?
I don't think so.
Episode 11, Out of Mind, Out of Sight, another High School is Hell episode, the dangers of sort of feeling socially invisible.
Is it Claire Duvall in this episode?
Is that who it is?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was, I was like, oh yeah, cool.
Yeah. I really like this episode, actually. I think it's like the flashbacks and stuff to that. I can't remember the character's name. Maybe that's... says something about me, like the way she's ignored, the turning invisible stuff, the psychosis she goes through, the focus on Cordelia. I think I really enjoyed this episode too, like sort of pulling Cordelia into the Scooby gang a little bit was fun this episode. I particularly enjoyed how this episode ended. It's one of the more out there. Like, there's the abrupt bit where the agents just sort of show up and say, hey, you know, we'll take care of her sort of thing. But then the final stinger with, like, the agents leading in this girl that you can't see into this room full of kids that we can't see and sits down to look at, like, learning how to become, like, an assassin for the government. Is, like, is such an out-there idea. Just, like, the cool that you hear. Yeah. And she's like, oh, I could get into this. Yeah. It's such a great little thing. I can't remember. Maybe somehow this comes back in future seasons. I don't think
it does. I don't think it does.
Even for an episode. Excuse
I mean,
me.
It might be happening in the background, but they're invisible, so we haven't noticed. That would be amazing, actually.
Just like all these assassinations happening in the newspaper. Can we trace back to
every time Giles is reading the paper? Yeah, it just talks about an assassination. Oh, I wish that were true. I really wish that were true.
But you can throw that in there and go, this world is like, goes way bigger. Past what's happening at Sunnydale. Yeah, yeah. That was fun.
Yeah, I think that, as you were saying, the folding in of Cordelia is really good. As we know, she becomes a much larger part of the show moving forward. And it's like a nice step for that moment we then get of her in the final episode, Prophecy Girl, in which I actually screamed when she appears in the car. I went, Cordelia! Yeah, so it's any time we get to spend with Cordelia, I'm happy because she's a pretty important character to me.
She is looking ahead to season two just a little bit. I mean, even in season one, Charisma Carpenter is like mainline. She's got a credit in the opening.
Yeah.
She does in season two. David Boreanaz also has one. As much as I've watched of season two, Cordelia's basically in every episode, and Angel's barely in any episode. I'm like,
the way
I'm glad she's getting. I'm glad. Well, yeah. I'm like, why is he even getting billing in this? But she deserves it. She's great. Okay, let's get to episode 12 then, the finale of the season. I imagine. I get the feeling they probably knew they were going to get picked up pretty quickly. But let's, like any season one, you never know.
Yeah.
Prophecy Girl could always be the final episode, the end, right? So it's got to be both a finale to the season, but potentially a finale to the show. How do you feel about Prophecy Girl?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, like, obviously the line I was referring to takes place in this episode. There's a lot in here that I really love. And so,
I'll
the first one is, obviously, we have had this, like, underlying story that Xander has a crush on his friend Buffy. And has he been subtle about it? No. Is Buffy aware of it? Maybe slightly, but mostly not.
Surely she's not that.
I like to think she's actively ignoring it.
I think so. She's putting up with him.
Yeah, I mean, he gave her a bracelet, whatever. Yeah, so when he finally gets, like, the gumption to tell her, and she just says, like, I just don't see you that way. And he has his little, I do appreciate, he has like his little like hissy fit, but then he's like, I'm sorry, I just don't take rejection well. And like, that's a very relatable thing. Like, it's really hard, I think, as an adult. It's much, much easier to do, and we should all be able to do it now, is to receive rejection and hold space for that person to have their own feelings. Like the person that is rejecting us being like, well, valid, great. But as a teenager, to be like, you know, it's up, he's like, oh, you know, I'm happy to wait. And I believe he says some disparaging things about Angel or whatever it is. And then quickly realizes that he is actually talking to his friend and just needs to acknowledge it. Like, oh, like I'm actually hurt and I probably just need to go now.
He's not really, I mean, he's petty about Angel, sure. Like, he feels like, you know, he's competing with this guy or whatever. He's not disparaging to Buffy, though, which, like, obviously that's a very, very low bar to get over, but it's like, we've seen how he can behave with his worst impulses sometimes.
Yeah,
so he's,
but
not,
I think,
that,
like,
at least, which is good.
I will say, though, but I think in terms of, like, in being disparaging towards Angel is actually insulting Buffy, because it's about, like, she can't
her taste
trust her own judgment or her own taste or whatever it is. You know, it is so that she questions her own taste is the motivation there. But, you know, I also enjoyed, and he's like dealing with that rejection. And what I found interesting was Willow comes to see him and is, you know, asking how it went. Didn't go well. He asks her, or assumes that she will go to the spring fling with him. And she's like, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to be with someone who is thinking about wanting to be with someone else. And she walks out hurt, and he's upset at himself. He's like, oh gosh, I can't win today or whatever. And then later on, we see him listening to country music. I was like, bro, like, pick up the phone and talk to Willow, because you've upset her. Like, yes, your feelings are hurt, but, like, actually, Willow is the one hurt in that situation. And he's apparently still not getting exactly why she's hurt by that, which was shocking to me. But teenage boy, I suppose it makes sense.
No, so that, it's, like, it's, I think it's the same way that Buffy does or doesn't know, you know, about Xander. Xander does or doesn't know. Doesn't he fucking knows. He's just not interested.
He likes the attention. Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
Totally. So there's, like, we've got this kind of, like, what feels like very high stakes social teen drama in this episode, which is working on in all facets for me. I'm totally invested in that, and heartbroken and annoyed and all the things I'm meant to be feeling. And then it's, you know, in this episode, we also have Buffy finds out that she is prophesied to die and the emotional stakes of that and the culmination of this kind of overarching story that we've seen slowly play out throughout the season is also happening and it's all contained in one episode. And I enjoyed that part of it as well, particularly Buffy's journey through that and accepting her fate.
Yeah, the... I 100% agree with all that. It's like, it's a great emotional climax for the more interpersonal relationship storylines. It's a great climax on the overarching responsibility of being a 16-year-old girl who has to save the fucking world. And I love the, like, the irony that if she hadn't gone down, you know,
yeah,
that he wouldn't have been able to get out. But at the same time, because she has been able to form a close connection with people like Xander and Willow, she dies, but she comes back and she's able to defeat this guy once and for all. He's not just going to be stuck in the Hellmouth like bottle cork that he's been in. He's gone after this. Well, we see there's a little bit more to deal with that. Actually, very quick spoilers. First episode of season two is really, really good. that deals a little bit with the aftermath of this stuff, but... the idea that she's able to come back more powerful and get rid of him for good is fantastic. Yeah. And it sets up beautifully. You don't know it at the time, but boy, this episode and what happens episode sets up for some massive stuff going forward from here on, which is huge. Sarah Michelle Gellar is wonderful in this. Anthony Stewart Head is fucking fantastic in this episode as well.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
We haven't talked a lot about Giles because Giles is not getting a lot of, like, character stuff to do. Like, there's not... Giles-centric episodes really yet, apart from like him and Miss Callender. He's more just like the, I wouldn't say exposition person, because he's got more of a character than that, but he is guiding Buffy. He is the voice of like, this is your responsibility, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, I think in that scene that we get where Giles is talking to Angel about, look, I've read this prophecy, I'm really upset about it, all that stuff, and then Buffy comes in and is clearly rattled. It's a fantastic scene, and just like, the look on Giles' face, and we see what is to be, like, what their relationship becomes and very clearly becomes is he loves and cares for Buffy so much. And, yes, he's, you know, trained his whole life to see the Slayer as the Slayer, and a larger purpose is important. But he, like, really cares for this young person that he is responsible for. Mm-hmm. And when her heart breaks, his heart breaks. When she's in danger, he feels it to his core. And we really see it in that scene. And it's really moving.
That whole thing that he's going to be the one to go down to give a shit about what the prophecy says. Like, I'll probably die doing it, but I'm going to go. Fucking love you, Giles. You're the best.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was such a great encapsulation. If it was the end of the show, it obviously wouldn't have become the phenomena that it did, but you couldn't have been unhappy with where the show got to. Xander's CPR is weak sauce. I don't know how the fuck he brought anyone back to life with that sort of shit.
Yeah.
Do you like that? Do you like that Xander's the one to bring her back?
Because
I do. Like,
not really, but that's because of my personal thoughts on Xander. I mean, I'm glad it wasn't Angel.
Yes.
Obviously, Willow, I wouldn't want Willow to be in that position. I think it was a good moment for Xander to step up and go out.
Yeah.
Go beyond himself, just in terms
show
of like
his worth, also, his which worth, is always the problem with Xander is like, what the fuck do you do? How do you contribute to this team?
Yes. And to see, like, beyond romantic intention, he does care about Buffy.
Yes.
And I think that's important to establish and remind the audience of.
Before we get to final thoughts, something we really haven't talked about is, yes, there's episodic, but there is this overarching storyline that's happening in the background. It's very, very in the background for a lot of the show. You don't even know it's there most of the time. But we have this concept of the Master, this ancient vampire that's living under Sunnydale who can't escape. He's tried to open the Hellmouth and bring about the apocalypse before. It failed. He got stuck there in sort of, as I said, this like cosmic bottle cork. And the plan is to release him back onto the world. Doing so will bring about the apocalypse and end the world, but also he's a bad guy and he'll get out. How do you feel about the Master as like the original Buffy big bad and how it plays out in this season?
One, I think the makeup is great. Like, even for like 1997, I'm like, that it looks good.
He's disgusting.
It's a gross face. Yeah. It's a really gross face. So I enjoyed that. It's funny rewatching it because I remember him being way scarier. Watching it, I'm like, this guy's just like a bitch.
Like, a bit of a diva, isn't
he's just like Meryl Streep in Devil Wears Prada. Like, he's so cutting and so mean, but seems to be really enjoying himself, which is great.
In the Dracula, like, you know, he comes from the Dracula school of vampires. Yeah.
He's very like Nosferatu.
Yes.
Just both in design and in personality, which is quite fun. I don't find him the most engaging part of the show, that's for sure. But I think for a first big bad, I think it's a solid choice to have like an ancient vampire like this, prophecies, all that stuff. And we know that he's really powerful. While we can't really see it, we do experience that through the fear that other vampires have in his presence, which is important to establish. It always makes me laugh every time. He loves to touch those boundaries. Oh, boy. Like the little
make
walls.
Make the air go wobbly, wobbly.
He loves that. That's true. I would. You're absolutely right about that. Yeah, he's fine. Can you explain to me? I might have missed it. What does the Anointed One do? Do they just need to exist?
No, it just brings Buffy to...
Oh, that's it. Okay.
Pretty much that's what the prophecy seems to like. The prophecies are a little bit whatever anyway, but it's like there was this five people die. One of them rises as the Anointed One. They got that wrong, obviously, in that episode about who it was. And then we'll appear as a child is what that monk guy figured out. And then we'll lead. The idea was he would lead the Slayer to the Master and she will not know who he is. And like, that's it. It's like his job was like just to bring him to bring her to the Master, basically.
Do you think that the prophecy was destined to somewhat fail because she did know who he was?
Maybe. You could read into that, I guess, that they were aware of it. But I think the thing is the prophecy didn't fail. She died. She did die. Everything happened in the prophecy was true.
I mean by like it didn't bring upon like the apocalypse. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
I don't think the prophecy necessarily says that. It's like...
Oh, doesn't it?
Okay. It says that like... I don't have to double check, but I'm pretty sure it's like, yes, he understands what him rising will mean. But more importantly, it brings him to the Master and then he's able to escape. Yeah, yeah. He's sort of like cosmic prison there.
Yeah. But yeah, I think in terms... If we're talking about prophecies, I think this show loves to play with a prophecy and definitely. How like... predetermined fate, you know, while
the gift.
It's good to be informed and all that stuff, like you still have your own will and self-determination and losing hope because of what something has told you you can be is not the way to walk through life. Yeah.
Well, the prophecies tend to give you room, like the prophecies will come true, but there's room for like...
Exactly. They're not everything.
Interpretation or like, yeah, you know, there's space there to make it work one way or the other. The you haven't watched much of season two yet, have you?
I haven't started it yet.
Okay. We do, like, we get a little bit of extra stuff with the Anointed One as well. I don't know if you remember that or not, but like it's not 100% done with quite yet. The other thing, just on the Master as a bad guy. I think I agree with you. It's perfect villain for season one. I think the balance there is really good. It's like he doesn't overshadow the season. He is that impending doom behind it. He sort of just represents like Buffy's obligation, right? Buffy's biggest villain in season one is just like being the Slayer, right? Like her inability to live a normal life because she has the responsibility to save the world. And like that is weighs so heavily on her shoulders. He represents that. Is it the most compelling compared to future villains? There are definitely villains that speak more to more complex sides of Buffy than that. But in terms of like, you want to build the show on a strong foundation, this season and his role in it plays out perfectly, I think. And I agree with you that like the Master is just fun to spend some time with. I think the performance is great. He is, as you said, like campy and a bit of a bitch and just like, oh, by the way, I like your dress and like all this sort of stuff. Like, and that makes him a good foil for Buffy as well, who likes a quip or two herself. Like, it serves its purpose exactly as it should and allows, like, the Master walked so glory can run, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so we can get...
Ooh, all, does she know, run?
Oh, boy, does she run. I think the Master's great.
Yeah.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes, Damask?
I only have one, just because I just enjoyed watching the show. But my one note is Angel's worst crime, the thing that should torment his soul the most, is his tattoo. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Oh, Angel's, isn't it? Like, that is such a, like...
Of the time.
That's an element
tattoo.
Of the time.
Yes.
It only could have been worse if it was tribal or like one of those like barbed wire tattoos around
him. Imagine if he had that.
I'm so not convinced that David Boreanaz doesn't have that tattoo and just they have to cover it with makeup.
It looks pretty fake.
Yeah. No, the tattoo. Sorry. On. I meant, I was saying, I think David Boreanaz has one of those.
Oh, gotcha.
Barbed wire for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's like, I thought I would write down more lines that I liked. I don't think the show was necessarily at its wittiest or its snappiest yet. Like, it's got, there are some all time classics. Although, the ending line of Buffy's, it's like, I may be dead, but I'm still pretty or whatever it is. Like, that's iconic. Mm. Which says it to the master. I think my favorite like little bit was Allison Hannigan as Willow when they're talking about the Invisible Girl and how they've all written "Have a Great Summer" in her yearbook and how that's like the kiss of death. It's like we've never seen her before, and there's Xander's "Have a Great Summer," and then Willow's is no, sorry, "Have a Nice Summer," and Willow's is "Have a Great Summer." See, I care. She worded it just slightly differently. Love that. Xander rides a skateboard in like his introduction.
But he does acknowledge that he doesn't know how to stop.
True, true.
So it's all for image. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So we never see it again. It's like that didn't work out. Let's never do that again. Yeah. All right. The little detail that I loved that I'd never noticed before is in one of the early episodes, Buffy is like, you know, rummaging through her Slayer stuff that's hidden in her bedroom. She's getting some things to go and do some, I don't know, patrolling or whatever. And like in her box around crucifixes and holy water and stuff is a jar of communion wafers. How does that work? What's their purpose? Do you like shove one down a vampire's throat? Should there be some Ribena in there as well? Like, what's the? I just thought that was
the body
never
of Christ compels you. I don't know. I really don't know. That's amazing.
Thought that was great. Highlights and lowlights. What was your lowlight of the season, Damask?
I mean, it's definitely like the dummy episode,
the puppet show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be that.
I agree. I'm just going to go on the episode. I'm going to say the puppet show is the weakest episode. If you could remove one and never think about it again, I think the puppet show would be a really, really, really easy just like cut. What about your highlight?
You know, I keep mentioning it's got to be the scene where Buffy, the moment that hits you really hard that she is a 16-year-old, the weight of the world is on her shoulders. It is a beautiful moment between her and Giles as well. So that moment for me really hit.
I think in general, I think Prophecy Girl, if I'm going to choose an episode, I think is the strongest. It's the best example of what Buffy can be at its best. Mm-hmm. It builds on the work the show did, making you care about these characters. It builds on the work the show did, making you understand Buffy's plight, the situation she's in. And like, if it was to be the final episode of the show, you'd be satisfied in saying like it was mission accomplished. And I know how important what happens in this episode means going forward. And I basically instantly started watching season two afterwards. Yeah. Like, it's great. It's a great episode. Predictions, hopes, or concerns? Well, question for you then instead. We can't predict what's going to happen in a show we've already watched before. Mm-hmm. Do you think we will ever get more Buffy? And or do you want more Buffy?
Do I think we will? Yes, I do.
I think so too.
Do I want more Buffy? I mean, here's the thing. I guess Buffy is, you know, we've seen the horribleness of Star Wars fandom. Buffy, I guess, is my Star Wars, but I refuse to be one of those people that if future iterations exist and are subpar, I'm not going to, cry about it and be like, it now retroactively ruins. Buffy exists as a whole, and that whole to me is practically perfect in every way and is so important. And I don't mean perfect in terms of, you know, it always executes things perfectly. It's perfect to me because it was a show that has enriched my life beyond compare. And nothing will ever change that. So if they make
even shitty creators,
even terrible choices, even if they go, this is now canon and it, you know, quote unquote, ruins things that have happened in the seasons that we have now. That doesn't matter. This show will always exist and will always be just as special. So they can do whatever they want with this intellectual property because this is far more than just intellectual property to me.
So the answer to the question is, do you want more Buffy? The answer seems to be no, though. Like,
no, I don't need it. What I have is... I don't need it. If they make it and it's fabulous, then I will be like, oh, yes, I've always wanted this. I never knew how much I wanted this. Because when I think, okay, something similar is A League of Their Own to me. I love that film. It's so important. Did I, you know, thinking about, oh, a show, oh, that could be cool. And then I watched it and I never knew how much that show and how they made it, how much that means to me. That's a really great show. And what they did just made my heart sing. So if they make something like that in terms of Buffy, of course I'm going to be happy. But do I hope for it? No, I don't.
I think we will get more Buffy one day. There was a plan. They were going to reboot it or do a sequel series. It was hard to tell what that sort of was going to be. It seemed to get shelved last year, mostly because I think the Joss Whedon of it all has made that very toxic right now. You can't really touch Buffy without invoking his name, so that's never a good thing. Do I want more Buffy? I think the answer is complex, but it's kind of yes. I wouldn't mind seeing someone try. I think I get excited about it. I don't think I want it to be a continuation of the Buffy universe that we're familiar with. Does that make sense? Like, I don't necessarily want it to be a sequel series with a different Slayer. I don't want them to bring back Sarah Michelle Gellar. I don't think she wants to come back to, like, bring Buffy back. And if you really want more Buffy stuff, there was a series, a couple of seasons of comic books, I think, True of Angel as well. So there's stuff out there if you're looking for more Buffy desperately. I think the best approach would be just a straight up reboot, modernize it. It'd be the same characters essentially, but with different actors, and update it for the modern sensibilities, basically. The question is, what's the purpose of it? Is like, if you were going to do that, how valuable is it? To speak to another generation and try and offer the same thing, I think there's some value there, definitely. But can it do something that the original series didn't do aside from being set now? I'm not sure, honestly. I'm not sure there's a whole lot to achieve there. Whereas I guess at least with like something like A League of Their Own, that's a great movie, right? But it's limited in scope because it was a movie. And you could argue that there was modern storytelling where you allow you to tell some stuff that was sort of hidden under the surface of that.
Yeah,
that
only absolutely.
Because it's not time to like look deeper than that. It's a fairly focused story, but you could see how you can expand that into a bigger world. I'm not sure Buffy leaves a lot left on the table that you need to go to. You could make it a bit gayer than it already was, I guess. You could make it a bit more modern, but it's fairly all that stuff anyway. I think it's pretty universal.
Yeah, my only concern, say, if they did make a modern Buffy, is that it would lessen the likelihood that people would go and watch the old one.
Well, that's the question that's going to happen with, like, the live-action Avatar The Last Airbender that's coming out, supposedly this year, is, like, is the value in that going to be that people are going to go back and watch the original animated show, or is it going to overshadow that? I don't know. I don't know. If they brought it back, I feel like they would have to try and also try and differentiate themselves from the original somehow. I wonder whether they're going to miss the tonal importance or the things that make Buffy, Buffy. Is it going to become more like Riverdale? Do you know what I mean? Where it becomes more like romance orientated and sexualized and that sort of stuff in that way. Or more like Sabrina, which at its best, I thought Sabrina did some good Buffy stuff and then got worse as it went on. It sort of it lost all of that. It cooked it. So there's that worry. But I would be supportive of an effort. I'd be supportive of it. I think if it made Buffy relevant to another audience, and especially if it allowed people to go back and enjoy the original, then great.
I think, now that I'm older, I'm like less precious about the idea. I'm like, people can do whatever they want. It actually doesn't matter. It is of no consequence to me because I just can love the things I love.
Yeah, but I'm definitely not aching for like I need more from this universe because maybe that's a time thing. Maybe if you asked me like a year after the show ended, I might have been like, oh, I'm just missing Buffy so much. I want more of it.
Yeah. But I mean, we get to the end of the series and a part of me is always like, I'm so sad because I don't want to leave. You know, like that is always like a huge part of the show. Even, you know, every time I rewatch it, and it's been countless times, I always have this like huge gaping hole in my heart that it's over again, which talks to the power of the show. So I always have that feeling, but I'm not like, but I'm still content. I'm satisfied with what I have.
Well, the answer is go and find the next thing, you know? You can go watch Angel, for instance, which I'm planning with Steph when we get to season 4, which is when Angel starts, to go back and forth between the show like they aired on TV.
Yeah.
But, like, go find other shows. Go start watching, you know, there is so much TV out there. This is what we've proved over the last 6 years. There's more TV than you can possibly watch in a lifetime. Yeah. It's impossible. Yeah. You know, go and find the next thing and come back to Buffy down the track. Something else can... doesn't need to be more of the same thing. You can find other things. There was also at one stage there was a pitch to do an animated Buffy show. The little, like, not sizzle reel, but little, like, proof of concept video is available. Yeah. You can see it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you could do that. Like, I like the idea of, like, do a Buffy TV show where they never have to grow out of high school. You just keep the whole thing set in high school.
Yeah.
And you could even bring back some of the original the actors' voice talent if you want. And, like, sort of just fill in some of the in-between parts even. Tell stories or an alternate universe version of Buffy that doesn't play it exactly the same way, but with the same characters, but in animated form. I'd be cool for something like that, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. That'd work out.
I don't hate that idea. Yeah.
And it would differentiate itself enough that I think you wouldn't have to be constantly comparing the two. Since this is our last chance, do you have any recommendations regarding Buffy for listeners? Like, is it as simple as just start season one, work your way through all seven seasons?
Yes.
Or are there any episodes you'd recommend? Like, for instance, Doctor Who, it's easy sometimes to get people hooked into the show by going, listen, you should go watch Blink, or you should watch this episode because it's such a great example of what the show can be at its best. If someone's still gotten this far somehow and they're like, I'm not sure, could you point them in the direction of any particular episodes that they should watch?
Yeah. I mean, there are heaps of episodes that, like, I really, really love. I've got to say two things. Firstly, you absolutely have to watch this show, or should watch. You don't have to do anything. You should watch this show from the beginning all the way through. It is that journey that is something so special to experience that I really am hesitant to encourage listeners to go and watch a random episode. If you're someone who, like, is really lacking in motivation, and Lord knows I never have motivation, so I get it. if you really, like, if that's really stopping you from beginning, I don't know, go watch Hush. Because there's heaps of episodes that I love but have, like, huge kind of ramifications or meaning because of its context.
Yeah.
Hush kind of just is a cool, interesting episode. There are obviously larger things going on, but it's a bit of fun. But also just, like, watch the first episode.
Yeah.
Just watch the first one and see if it's something you're interested in. And I recommend you stick with it because it will certainly reward that experience. Yeah.
So I'm working my way back through it, and I struggle sometimes to remember, like, I watch a lot of season 6, but it's such a big, like, it's very season easy to get spoiled on so much of Buffy by jumping to season 6.
My favorite. Obviously, I love season 5. Season 6 is my favorite. I know. It's the most, like, emo season. It's, like, so full of, like, but I don't know. It just, like, it kind of, like, broke my heart in a way that a television show never had before. I love that season. And yes, there are episodes in that season that I love. I'm thinking, you know, and please don't go and watch this, but, like, Tabula Rasa
is almost the one I would recommend, right? Because it's incredible. I think you can jump into that without context and have a fun time.
Yeah, sure. But it's only really, really great because we know who those characters are and why they're acting the way that they are is both humorous and heartbreaking. I don't actually think that's a good one.
Once More with Feeling. It's like, you can enjoy Once More with Feeling without having watched the previous stuff.
But it's not the same.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is something else that's special about Buffy. It's like you can point and pull out particular episodes and go, that was an amazing episode of TV. The Body, for instance. Or yeah. that's oh. a really cool episode of TV.
Don't yeah, go cool. and watch The Body.
Do not go and watch The Body, please.
Like, that is the one that you should absolutely never, ever watch by itself.
No, you have to watch that in context.
Yes.
Have to. I would even say like the Zeppo and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. These are episodes you could pull out and you can examine them as an individual thing and go like, this was an incredible episode of television that was doing something that maybe hadn't been done before. But the truth is that almost every episode, particularly as the show goes on, becomes more and more crucial to the overarching storyline. Season 6 is the best example of this where like, Once More Feeling stands out as like an incredible episode of TV from the, its like craft point of view. It's also like crucial to the emotional development of these characters. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a pivotal episode. It can't just... It's not a throwaway filler episode that happens to be a musical. It
the
is
before
like...
before is so important and the after
and what,
is
and
so
And what
important.
This does and what yes. it means
this
going
is the
forward,
moment. This is the turning moment. Yes.
It's a pillar in the middle of this season.
Yeah.
And so you can't, you shouldn't experience it without seeing what comes before it. Yeah, yeah. And that's what's amazing about it is like, the standout episodes that, like Hush even, they still have, they aren't just, that you can't just pull them out. They do matter. Anyway, we could go on and on and on and on and on. Thank you so very much for listening to this episode and any episode, honestly, of Hunting Seasons over the last 6 years. You can find everything we've done via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, aka at Shawnee Boy Draws, and our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordis, on Twitter at bgordis. That's B-G-O-R-D-E-S, Damask.
You can't find me anywhere, but if you ever want to reach out, just, I don't know, tweet at Brod and he'll forward it along.
Tweet at me is probably the safest thing to do. I don't know what's going to happen to the Hunting Seasons.
He's my PA Twitter. At this point, moving forward. So, yeah.
Next episode, we back one last time for the Hunting Seasons grand finale special episode. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We will see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Absolutely.